Well, good evening, members and staff, and any members of the public who may be present. I'll call the meeting to order. We acknowledge that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. Do any of the elected members present foreshadow a possible conflict of interest with an item on the agenda? Councillor Telfer?
Just a potential conflict on an unsolicited proposal, in that later on it may appear before the CAP. It's a tricky one. It's just like a potential.
Right on the, at least on the edge of the boundary, that one. Well, when we get to the item, you can make a declaration if you wish. Would someone like to move confirmation of the previous minutes? General Counsel, Councillor Donovan, seconded Councillor Mason. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Elected member verbal communications are on the agenda this evening. Does anyone feel compelled to make a verbal report to Council? Well, in the spirit of togetherness, if none of the elected members are, I won't either. Would someone like to move that we accept the communications reports? Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Duncan. All those in favour? A question on the reports just before I put the motion. Yes, Councillor Hull? We've got the Mayoral, Deputy Mayor and Chief Executive and Executive Communications reports. Go ahead.
Just a broad observation, Mr Mayor. Out of all three of those meetings with MPs, and I don't think there's enough of that happening on both state, federal level and local government, the only meetings that seem to be happening are with the CEO. Is that because of requests made by them or by us? Or can just have an explanation why there seems to be exclusive meetings with the CEO rather than the mayor?
I made a decision 6 years ago not to include meetings with members of parliament in my communication report, as there are occasions when members of parliament don't necessarily want that to be public information, and I've been consistent with that, so it's not something that appears in the reports.
It's just would help me to understand that such meetings do happen because they should be happening.
We, beg your pardon, at one stage, maybe for years, there was a little notation on the Mayor's communication report at the bottom saying that meetings with members of Parliament, constituents, something like that, are not recorded. The real purpose of the communication report there is to see if there are any, twofold maybe, to see if there are public issues which other elected members want to know more about, which is fair enough, and also to have some transparency about, you know, the Mayor's meetings or the Chief Executive's meetings. If we're meeting with a major retailer every 2 weeks, you might want to know what that's about, and if it's not on the report but it's happening, you might want to know why not. So it's a matter of transparency as to the parties and the issues. But as I said, it certainly wouldn't be realistic or fair for the Mayor to, for example, include every meeting with a constituent, because they don't necessarily want their public business put into this agenda. And there's no. But anyway, I made the decision right at the outset that the same would apply in relation to members of Parliament.
Just a supplementary. Sure. If that's the case, well, why do we list the CEO's meetings with the MPs? Because the same rationale would apply, surely not?
It's up to the Chief Executive what he puts in his report. All right, do you want to add anything, Mr. Scull?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I've always put those meetings in mine. I've never thought about not doing it. I didn't even realise that footnote existed. It must have been before my time for the Mayor's reports. For the two meetings with MPs that I had in the last month, they both requested those meetings. One was about the Field River and one was about the area around Tonsley.
All right. Now, I didn't actually put that to the vote. All those in favour of accepting those reports, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. Committee recommendations. Would someone like to move confirmation of the minutes of the Asset and Sustainability Committee meeting? Move to Councillor Schilling. And Councillor Schilling would like to speak to that. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship. As members, I would assume you have read the minutes from the Asset Sustainability Committee. It was a very productive meeting. We discussed the transport plan, but the most important thing for me was with regards to our trees. And we had some outdoor staff which attended the meeting and provided some very useful feedback and some great ideas. And it was great to see them there. We had a great run through of a new site that we've created, Forest Tree, I think it's called, which was really good. And when that goes live, it'll be really interactive for residents and for us, which will be beneficial. But I think the important thing out of it is that the committee made a recommendation, which is noted in the minutes, for council to receive a report on planting more trees, on operation trucks, and investigating other ways of watering our trees. And I really think that's a great outcome from that meeting, that we've got that recommendation that's come towards council.
Yes, indeed, some very impressive developments in that area. Is that seconded, Councillor Gard? You want to speak?
Another question.
Go ahead.
I did come in. I wasn't in attendance from the get-go of that meeting. I'm not sure whether that should be taken into account in the attendance bracket at the top of the item. And it was the transport part that I missed, or I might have gotten the tail end of it. But I did have a question relating to what was said about Marion Road upgrade. I'm a little in query about what point three of the key discussion points means.
I think
which
that,
part of Marion Road
now,
and what
didn't
about
that refer to the study that was done for the area between Anzac Highway and Crossroad?
That's what
so
I thought.
So actually, one of the staff want to just fill us in briefly on, I mean, are we aware then of the conclusions of the study or not? Because it was federal government driven, I believe. Mr. Lyons.
Through the chair, Councillor, that bit related to a presentation by Mr. Andrew Excel of the Department of Infrastructure and Transport, and I was very grateful for him for coming along at relatively short notice, and he presented exceptionally well, to be honest. And the third bullet there is with regard to the Marion Road upgrade, which is that section between Cross and Anzac Highway, and that study has been complete. But the problem we've had is that it hasn't been released for public consumption. So they're doing that at the moment. They're preparing a public plan for release. And as you'll see in the document, it's planned for release in Q2, which is April to June this year.
Sounds like a lot of media preparation to be done before we can see it. Thank you.
I am a bit of a dreamer, and I'm not sure whether I did dream this, but I thought that something was said following the completion of that study, which I think was a $6 million study from memory, that said no further action for the foreseeable future. And am I misguided on that in some way?
I think you're fair there, Councillor, because it's a very expensive study and a very expensive project, and it just doesn't have funding. So it's on the back burner until they can get federal funding for that project.
Sorry, through the chair once more. So that's not to say that they're not in favour of it, but it's dependent on the funding aspect alone.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other... I've had a mover and seconder. Any other questions regarding those minutes? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, carried unanimously. Thank you. So we move on to confidential items. And members of staff sitting comfortably in the gallery may find this annoying, but we find as elected members that it's better to deal with the confidential items early in the evening, because it makes a lot more sense to us that, rather than at 9:30 in the evening, and they tend to be the more complex issues. sometimes more controversial issues. So that's what we're about to deal with, and one of the members may wish to move the three cover reports which place us into confidence for discussion of those items. En bloc, moved Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. So we deal with Capella Reserve construction first, and that means those members of staff relevant to that issue can remain in the room, and I'll have to kindly ask the others to leave. Thank you. Yes, we go back into public session. Councillor Valeska, did you have a point of order or something?
Yeah, turf.
Turf wars, yes. Yes.
I'm interested in property where the neighbour in the groups got artificial turf on their on the verge.
Well, so this does need to be clarified. Does Ms. McKenzie know about it, or?
No, I know another question.
So, do any councillors currently have turf on their verge? Or do any of their family members, various associated people, have artificial turf on their verge, which has been put there since the amnesty finished last time we considered the matter? That's the question, because the outcome could have an impact, a benefit or detriment to them. Councillor? Then if you're not aware of any such person among your associates or yourself in that situation, I can't see how there's an interest that could be affected.
The reason I ask, and part of some of the work that's been done about this, is stuff that's been put previously. Because there are, from what I read, the options do allow us to go back before the amnesty period. And he's asking us how we move forward on that. So,
Well, let. So, Councillor, the options that have been put forward by staff, and it's not a bad thing to have this on the record anyway, option one, all artificial turf without a permit to be removed. Now, turf that was installed prior to the amnesty, if I can call it that, or requiring a permit, doesn't need a permit under any of these scenarios, does it? Oh, I see. I beg your pardon. Thank you, Councillor Seeker. Direct removal of all turf installed after verge guidelines were in place and requesting removal on properties where it was installed beforehand. So the request, I don't think, brings a benefit or detriment. A compulsion or a potential fine or permit fee does. So that's why I made the comments I did earlier. Option three is to have the same as option two with some financial assistance for removal and disposal. And option four is doing nothing, allowing what's there to remain. So in terms of the motion that the motions that are canvassed by staff in the report, I can't see that someone with historic artificial turf is affected by any of those options in terms of a benefit or detriment. Having said that, it is always up to an elected member individually to decide if they have a material, actual or perceived conflict of interest. Councillor Valeska.
Longer than the amnesty period, so I'd like that clarification. But otherwise, I have got 4 points where it differentiates between turf prior to the amnesty, where there's no footpath or at all, and also between where there's turf between the footpath and the road. Because there's different categories. It's just that I've seen the impact our council's intervention has had on some elderly residents who've had turf all the way in this little side street, all the way down to the verge, thought they were doing the right thing. It was there a long time, and we have caused them grief. So I think we need to basically draw the line in time and be active from that period. And I'm not confident that that this does that.
Well,
unless I can get some staff member to explain and make it clear.
It sounds like the questioning of residents was part of the investigation process leading up to this report, but I'm just hypothesising. I don't know if can staff assist with that. Ms Harvey is coming forward. And meanwhile, I'll ask Ms McKenzie, Governance Manager, for any further advice.
Through the chair, just in the conflict of interest provisions, there isn't a conflict with the neighbour. It would only be created from a family member or for yourself directly. Is it a perceived conflict? So is it a strata group that you're a part of? So the strata group, you're part of the strata group? Yeah, well, that's different. If it's part of the strata group and the strata group is essentially the owner of the property out the front.
Yeah, so every owner of the of units in a strata title group could have a detriment or benefit if there was an outcome of the council meeting which would force them to remove or get a permit for artificial lawn on Council Verge anywhere around the property. Does that help you, Councillor Vlescu?
Yep, that's fine. So I'll choose to declare that and I'll happily, if need be, put dot points which highlights that specific category and remove myself from the debate.
All right, and just in terms of residents being questioned about their artificial lawn, Ms Harvey, can you shed any light on what Councillor Vlescu is talking about?
Yes, certainly through the chair. So up until recently, if we were informed of a resident or a property where artificial turf was installed, the first check that we do, if anything is installed on council property, is whether the owner has applied for and been granted a Section 221 permit, which is Section 221 under the Local Government Act, which allows people to alter the verge, which is part of the roadway. If they don't, and artificial turf would require a Section 221 permit, so it's quite complicated. It's about having a permit and meeting the requirements of the verge guideline. So whilst the amnesty or the verge guideline has only been in place for some time, the requirement to have a permit has been in place for quite some time. So our standard protocol when someone doesn't have a permit is to write to them and ask them, do they have a permit? And if not, they have to remove whatever it is that they've installed on our property. And that was the case, I believe, in the situation that you have brought to the attention of the members. When we started to see a couple of those issues, we halted that process and did a more thorough investigation of artificial turf across the whole city, and that's what's brought this report today.
And that could be a useful thing to clarify, Ms Harvey. Does that refer to residents changing the verge with anything? They could put down pebbles, they could lay grass, and they would need a permit to do that? Because if that's the case, I can say that almost everyone would be doing it in ignorance of Section 221.
Through the chair, that's correct. If they wanted to put grass, pavers, if they wanted to put a retaining wall, if they wanted to put a letterbox on council property, which the verge is, they would need a permit.
Well, that sounds a good article for next city limits, because I would say less than 1% of the population would realise that. Councillor Gard, you've got a question?
Yes, my question is, Your Worship, regarding option three, where it's spoken of some financial assistance to support this, does that refer to both the post-guideline period of people that have, despite the guideline, placed the turf down, or is it, in other words, is it all or just the people that had it in place before the guideline came in place that we would compensate?
Through the Chair, I think it could be applied to either. It would be up to members to consider what they think would be reasonable in terms of some financial assistance.
Now, Councillor Villescu has usefully brought up a motion, I think, in writing, and that's, I have to applaud the procedure rather than just winging it. But Councillor Villescu, I'll look to you then for a motion.
Basically, there's 4 points. First is not obviously to allow any artificial turf installed after 9th of May 2019. I am happy to take some advice on the exact date to fit in with the rest of the report. To the second point is to allow all turf installed with a permit, of course. And now this is where I want to differentiate. If someone's property goes all the way to the road and they and it's existing before they actually this rule came in, I don't think we should be asking them to remove it, because it's quite a significant impact on the aesthetic. And the fourth point, and this is where I will leave it, council can choose whether to allow or disallow turf installed before the same period, the 9th of May, which is located between the footpath and the curb. So that's the bit where I'll leave, and it's allow or disallow. I'm happy for that part to be decided without me.
Now, I'll just ask staff for comment on the wording. Marion Council's very familiar with the principle of disallowance. We seem to have copped a fair bit of it lately. But from the State Parliament, but I'm not sure it's the right word in this context. You know, whether it should be ban or whether it should be maintain prohibition or whether it should be something else. Would somebody like to assist?
Through the Chair, I could perhaps just point out that when Council disallowed turf in 2019, they use the words continue to identify artificial turf as not permitted for use on council verges.
Well, I think that's consistent with what Councillor Villescu intends, and there is something useful about consistency of language, it must be said.
So, Your Worship, I'm quite happy to move point one with the 3 points in addition. And then I'm happy to remove myself for the rest of the debate for the other point, if people wish to move. But I just think it's good to clarify the difference.
Well, can I just, before we go on, can I clarify the nature of the interest, the conflict of interest that you identified? You're saying a family member is part owner of a property which could be affected by this motion?
Yeah, I've got an interest in the thought that either way we should move for a point. So this is something that was happening before.
Can he move it?
Interest in the property and this.
That sounds like it may be a material conflict of interest.
Why?
Yep. So you only want to deal, I mean, it's probably permissible for you to deal with turf installed after 9th May 2019.
Yes.
But as long as you don't say anything about turf installed before 9th of May, you might be all right. Well, the thing is, councillor, you being an associate pursuant to the Local Government Act or yourself, from what you've said, has an interest in property which has artificial turf installed prior to 9th of May. Well, the only category that matters then is dealing with turf that was installed after 9th of May, which would absolutely not cover your situation. But in terms of dealing in any way with properties which have artificial turf laid before 9th of May, I would say you're in danger.
Okay, all right, that's fine. My concern was based on the impact on residents for the category where there was no footpath at all, and that's why I wanted to... So I did that to be able to represent residents in my ward, and that's why I have the area that's...
Well, unfortunately, you may not be the person to do it. You could move the first two parts of that, but I would say you're in danger if you proceed with beyond that. Do you want to go ahead or not? So material conflict of interest is declared. Sorry about that, councillor, but them's the rules. Councillor Mason. Please. Intention is artificial turf, I believe.
So the intention.
So I'm just clarifying, in light of Councillor Mason's question, the motion was not accepted after discussion, so there is no motion before the chamber at present. Any member may move any of the options in the paper or something else. I will take questions first because, and I can tell you members, I've allocated about 2 hours for this item. The rest should take about a quarter of an hour. Councillor Schilling, questions.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just a couple of questions around this. I'm assuming that we're targeting only artificial turf. We're not going to be targeting people that have planted on the verge with plants or anything like that. We're only targeting artificial turf.
That's that's certainly what the motion and report before us are about, although we've just been advised that the reach of the law goes much further.
I'm just concerned about the, it should be noted that there are other installations on verges that are contravention to the Act, such as retaining walls, letterboxes, fences, that are managed on a case-by-case basis when a complaint is made. So only if John Smith complains about Joan Hall next door, that's when we will act on that. So we're not going to go and act on nearly every property in the Southern Hills ward that is probably in breach of the verge guidelines. Unless it's artificial turf.
Yes, through the chair, that's my understanding. We don't have any resolution to go and follow up all of those proactively.
Great.
So there are. We're only going to enforce this law in respect of one item, and others if there's a complaint. Other questions? First, Councillor Pryor. I think the answer is walk on it. Ms.
Harvey? Can I just put that on the record? The question is, what can people do to their verges without a permit in the City of Marion?
Ms. Harvey.
Through the chair, they can't do anything. They need to apply for a permit to even do things like lay lawn, because it changes the roadway from our standard verge treatment, which is essentially dolomite.
Weeds.
And it means that they will then be responsible for anything that they do to their verge. The property owner is responsible for maintaining whatever changes they make to that verge. So there's a simple application process where they fill in a two-page form and they draw a quick sketch map of what they would like to do, and then within a short period of time that is assessed and granted, and they can get on and make those changes.
So residents are not allowed to grow weeds on their verge without a permit?
Well, under the verge guidelines, weeds would not be allowed.
Sounds like there's a tremendous opportunity for fee collection there, if we start finding people. And of course, the great tragedy of the debate is that council doesn't actually provide attractive treatments for vergers. Anyway, but we can still penalise them if people do. Councillor Pryor, you want to follow that through?
Yeah, I might as well. The next question is, like, I guess, why would we penalise a time-poor person who wants to have a nice-looking verge anyway?
Yeah, OK, we're getting into the debate at that point.
Oh, it's a pretty good question.
It's a very good question. Save it for the debate. Any other questions, factual questions, Councillor Masika?
And there has been 42 breaches of that guideline. Are we sure that these people, they didn't contact anyone at the council to ask for permission, whether verbally instead of writing? Because it will be, I feel it will be very embarrassing. We go in with the letters to ask them to remove. We find that somebody issued verbal permit. So are you certain that there was no any permit, which verbally approved permit from the
Ms. Harvey?
Through the chair, looking through all our records and speaking with some people who manage the permitting process, a number of which have been with council for quite some time, they're very sure that they wouldn't issue a verbal permit to someone. It may be that they might not have gone through a formal process, and there may be an email exchange or a letter written, but we don't have any records of those permits for artificial turf.
Right, if there are no other questions, I know Councillor Hull's keen to test a motion. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm happy to move option one, which is pretty much what I thought we had now, nearly 2 years ago. It would be in May this year. This council went through hoops with rescission motions and a lot of press about this very issue. And it disappoints me, Mr. Mayor, that in that time we've done nothing to stop the proliferation of plastic grass for our city. It has exploded. I've continually and continually reported it. I've been continually and continually told that we're going to act on it, Council. We're going to act on it. And here I am tonight with this report taking us back to square one, really. So option one is what I thought was in place nearly 2 years ago, but nothing has been done. The next, and what I was told maybe 6 months ago was, maybe a little bit longer, that, I'm sorry, Council, we don't seem to have any bylaw to deal with this. We don't have the capacity to deal with this. Well, I'm not sure whether inherently we still do. Nothing's been mentioned about any commitment to actually dealing with this. Now, I'm actually at least cutting a little bit of slack for those who got the permit, which is about four people. I just think that we need to actually draw the line as to what we expect on our verges. Plastic turf, if you've read the report, has got all sorts of inherent problems with it. And this council's really serious about reducing the effects of climate change and the heat sinks in our streets, then this is one of the things we can do, apart from planting trees. And not only that, plastic grass can impact on our street trees as well, because you've got to cut holes in it, stuff got to cut holes in it somehow, and there's all sorts of problems there. The tree's never really going to get a fair go with plastic grass.
Thank you, Councillor. Your time has expired. Is that seconded? Last call. Is the motion seconded? If not, the motion lapses and we'll go to something else. Councillor Crossland is seconding. Sorry, Councillor Schilling. is seconding.
Else?
Well...
Because that's what you said. You said we're going to move something else.
No, to clarify, if it is not seconded, then it lapses and we'll go on to something else.
I heard that you'd already said the motion lapsed, so I apologise there.
No, well, maybe I didn't make it clear, but clearly it wasn't seconded, so Councillor Schilling, over to you to move another motion.
Thank you, Worship. I will move option two. I think that makes the most logical sense and doesn't impact residents that have had artificial turf there for many, many years. I know of many houses that have had turf installed since the mid-2000s, and we haven't done anything about it then. And doing it now, I think, is a bit mean to retrospectively apply it. I think if we do it from sort of now on, that moves on. And I feel sorry for those people that have encroached on that 40 centimetre piece of verge, and we're going to tell them you need to rip that up. So I think option two best deals with it. I understand where Councillor Hull is coming from. However, I personally think, and it's on the record, that I think artificial turf looks better than dolomite. I understand there are issues there, but dolomite produces just as much heat as artificial turf.
I think we need to clarify option two, because my initial reading of it was that it was tougher than option one. Option one says take away all artificial turf which doesn't have a permit. Option two, remove everything, all of the artificial turf installed after the verge guideline was in place and the request. So, Ms. Harvey, can I just ask you to clarify? I really want to make sure that elected members are voting on the right thing.
Certainly. Through the chair, my proposal for option one was to direct all artificial turf, no matter how long it has been in place, and we estimate there's in the order of 240, perhaps 250 properties with artificial turf that may have been installed anywhere as far back as, say, 2007. Option two was to focus on the installation of turf that's happened after the verge guidelines were ratified, because that provides more clarity beyond what a section 221 permit does. It's very clear in the verge guideline that artificial turf is not permitted. That was when the verge guideline was first published. And then there was a 1 month period where artificial turf was allowed, and we have issued permits to four properties during that month, and then it was not allowed again. So it's since May 2018. Yep.
Thank you for the clarification, and thank you, Councillor Schilling. Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer, wish to speak? Anyone speaking against? Councillor Pryor.
I don't really think we should be interfering too greatly in this. I agree with Councillor Schilling. The dolomite rubble is not a look I'd like across the city. I do prefer a little bit of even artificial turf, and we're really, like I said before, penalising the time, poor people. I would prefer, every other week, I'd prefer artificial turf to dolomite rubble with weeds in it. So it's just about how you want your city to look, people. The environmental impact of this artificial turf is not super, but it's also not a really large area of council. And while we let people put artificial turf in their yard and around the whole front lawn of their house, which is a much greater area across the council, it makes absolutely no sense that we then ban it on a 40 centimetre piece of verge. So I'll be voting against this.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Question, Councillor Hull?
On the verbiage, direct removal of all turf installed after verge guidelines in place and request removal. Now, is...
The factual question, yes?
Yep, the request bit. Now, we've probably been in that place since the last 2 years. So
it's pretty clear what request means. So, yep, just come to the point. What's your question?
The enforceability of that, like direct, is fairly clear.
I think the very point of the motion is there'll be those who were directed, and for those who had installed artificial lawn years ago, it's a request. It's non-binding, it's non-enforceable, it's just a request. That was the intent.
Right.
So you understand?
So after the verge guideline, that's enforceable,
yep.
But before it's not?
Yep.
So we're going a step backwards to where we are currently.
Well, I'll let you make that comment, but we've had a mover, seconder, speaker against. Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Gard? No. Any other speakers in favour? Then if not, I'll just leave it to Councillor Schilling to close the debate. Thank you. The motion is tied, and the Mayor votes against. So we're not going with option one or option two. Would anyone like to move an alternative option? Councillor Gard.
I'm basically in the same camp as Councillor Schilling, except I do think option three is worthy. I think financial assistance could well be rendered. I come back to what are we trying to achieve, and one of the things we are trying to achieve is as Councillor Pryor said, a presentable city. And we're not doing very much on verges at all, and verges are a huge acreage. Only a tiny percentage of them are pre-2018 turf laid down. I can't see the point in getting people to rip it up, make it look awful, not gain anything on the climatic side of things at all. And then say to them, right, well, you can go to all the trouble of a remake and you can do it without any money. So I think in order to be consistent, sure, I didn't agree with the original motion in 2018 for the reasons I've just been mentioning, but I think the least we can do is to allow people their own way up to that 2018 point and compensate people that do actually elect to take the turf out at the same time. I don't think there's any misunderstanding on what I've said, but hopefully not.
Thank you. Is that seconded, or is there a Councillor Masika?
Yes, Your Worship. I remember when this issue came for the first time in 2018, I seconded the motion. With understanding that there's no place for artificial turf in the city of Marion because of the so many disadvantages we know caused by the artificial turf. Now, for this one, I know those people who installed up the artificial turf after the guidelines were moved and become operational. They did it with the intention they probably want to beautify the area, beautify the city, to make it look green. But unfortunately, they didn't know they're breaking up the guideline. And on the other note, you might find up those people who put up there, they might be new arrivals who they've never been in Australia long enough to know that the artificial turf, you have to get permission from the local council to install it. So I would say, look, for this time around, let's go in and support them to remove the artificial turf. But with the understanding that the community education will be done, and probably it will help those in future to understand that the permit is required if they're going to embark on using artificial turf in the local area.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Anyone speaking against? Or a question, Councillor Schilling?
Just some questions around the financial assistance. It says up to $250 as an example in this motion. How are we going to determine if they get 100, 250, if we set 250 as the maximum limit? And is this budgeted for ongoing after this year, or is it just a one-off budget line, and then come 2022, 23, we're not going to have to fund it anymore?
We currently don't have a budget set aside for this program, so it would be up to members to decide whether it would be an ongoing budgeted program. I guess my thinking would be that if we could support people to make the change early and get as many of those people to remove that artificial turf perhaps in the first year, a financial incentive might help them do that.
from a decision management point of view, I'd suggest that we deal with the motion as it is, but then have, if it is passed, have a supplementary motion which specifies the budget and the amount. Anyone speaking against or question, Councillor Hull? Ms. Harvey?
Yes, through the chair, it would be directing the people that have installed it after the guideline and requesting them, those people that installed it before the guideline. It's difficult to tell. We've written to five property owners. We've had one person remove the turf off their own fruition. We've had one property where council has removed the turf because the property owner had, the property had been sold and the new owner wasn't aware of the issues and we couldn't track down the previous owner. And we halted the three others that we had written to pending the broader review. So we never finished that process.
Well, it's sort of one out of one. That's not a bad percentage. Anyone else speaking against? Councillor Guards, Councillor Mason.
So I only learnt today that you need to get a permit for anything that you join the Birch, and I would think that probably 90% of residents in the, around the council would not be aware of a permit either. Look, I don't like artificial turf, but in saying that, I really don't like the dolomite either. And I think people are just trying to make the street look nice, make their property look nice, try and increase the property value. So as much as I would like it removed, I don't know whether it's equitable to just be giving residents any form of financial assistance for removing the turf when there may be many other people that would like some financial assistance just to make their turf look, make their verge look nice with plants or lawn, whatever. But they don't have artificial turf. So I think that's kind of unfair to those who want to make it look nice, but they don't have turf that they need to remove.
I see an idea sense. There for a Verge Grants Fund, but anyway,
yes.
Another time.
Or education about
requiring
a permit, or B, okay, let's try and make the city look nicer and let's decrease the heat in the streets. So, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Councillor Mason. I had thought you'd finished, but carry on. No, points well made. Any other speakers in favour? Then I'll leave it to Councillor Guard. Anything to close the debate?
Well, just addressing Councillor Mason's last point and her concerns about equity, I think a good part of the up to $250 would be the removal of of that verge material, of the artificial grass lawn. And then they would have the costs, like everybody else, to make good. I think it's I just think we don't want to kick them in the pants by forcing them to cause deterioration to their verge and at their own expense as well. That's really the fundamental.
I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? The motion's lost. Members, don't go away yet, because there's still one more option listed in the agenda. The motion, as suggested by staff as option four, is to take no further action in relation to existing artificial turf. Councillor Hull, point of order.
With option four, that wouldn't necessitate a rescission motion of the current motion from nearly 2 years ago.
That's a point of order worth considering. Ms. McKenzie advises that's probably correct, and due notice of a rescission motion has to be given. So having exhausted the options this evening, and thanks for the point of order, I would say as chair that we have exhausted our options this evening, and we all need to go away and think about a sensible and fair solution between now and the next meeting. So I propose to move on. Overrule me if you have to, but I propose that we move on. We've spent enough time on it. We're halfway through the council meeting. Next item on page 47, Tonsley Northern Vehicle Connection. Councillor Telfer's coming up with a motion. Right. The motion is printed with an extra sentence.
The extra sentence relates to something that I have watched all the way along monthly for a long, long time, the connection of Cowan Reserve with the Southern Regional Promenade. So I wanted it in the motion that this corner that's very tight between Cowan Reserve and the regional park will be greater than 20 metres wide as per the concept plan. So if they could just put that in, then I will just move as is. It is difficult to be cutting a piece of council reserve off for a road, but it is appropriate to have connectivity between Clovelly Park and Tonsley, and also to the south, the Tonsley Birch Crescent connecting through. So the connections are very valuable, but we want to hold as much of our park as we can, obviously.
Seconded. Councillor Masika, wish to speak to that?
Your Worship, I think Councillor Taifa has said it the way it is, and I second the motion.
Anyone against? Question, Councillor Hull?
Just out of curiosity, has all other options been explored in creating an appropriate alternative northern connector from the Tonsley Village site out to South Road?
Mr. Grimm, Dr. Grimm.
Through the chair, we've assessed Byron Avenue Reserve, which has significant vegetation and habitat value, so that wasn't as a preferred option. The remainder of the site is landlocked with private property. And the only other option, which is Selgar Avenue Reserve connection, is a one-way southbound access being developed by DIPTI, and that doesn't provide access to the north of Drury Terrace into the sort of Clovelly Park region, so it's only a small access for commercial properties to Tonsley Precinct.
Is this Cowan Court suggestion absolutely necessary? In other words, would the entrance, the current entrance that we all enjoy going out from Mab Circuit out to South Road, is that enough to allow appropriate access and egress for the potential population in there?
Dr. Grimm.
Through the chair, our evaluation is the benefits of providing connections to the north and the Clovelly Park catchment would outweigh the existing catchment to the east and west, which limits accessibility for that local area. The Tonsley development obviously has precinct approach of providing activation, retail, hospitality, and obviously existing community to provide those access points, the north and south are desirable.
Other questions or other questions? Yes, Councillor Gard.
Yes, if I could just ask through the chair, Dr. Grimm, if there is any relativity between the southern connection mentioned on page 49, which is still unfunded and requiring further design detail and traffic modelling investigations. Will these two work together and would the go-ahead of one be more difficult if we weren't to introduce them together? In other words, they go in sequence according to funding availability down the track for the southern one.
Dr. Grimm.
Through the chair, I think in terms of timing, it's not, they don't need to be in sequence in terms of occurring at the same time. The broader initiatives are around providing connections. So the implementation phases, obviously we're looking at doing the consultation phase around the northern connector due to timelines of consultation, land revocation, etc. The southern portion is reliant on obviously a current grant funding application to be able to proceed with that at present.
Any other questions, Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, just a quick one about cutting into Windsor Avenue. Did you do an assessment of whether you could cut straight into Windsor Avenue in the, on the corner there? And what is your reasoning for not looking at that?
Who would like to answer that? I'm just getting the map up.
As I can explain a little bit, Windsor Avenue looks like a much more significant road than Cohen Court. Cohen Court looks very, very narrow to be a sort of a major connector to a promenade.
Through the chair, there's significant vegetation and no access in terms of the ability to create a road corridor from into Windsor, and it's landlocked with private development to the south of Windsor and Byron.
Councillor Pryor, is that enough for you for now?
Yeah, I can take the rest offline, that's fine.
Excellent. I've had a mover and seconder. Anyone speaking against? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. So, thanks, Dr. Grimm and Mr. Salmon. So, we'll move on to page 72, the LGA submission, from us to the LGA regarding electronic attendance at council meetings. I thank staff for taking elected member comments into account. That all seems to cover everything fair enough now. Anyone like to move accordingly? Councillor Schilling? Is that seconded? Councillor Duncan? Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. I'd suggest if you want to take the budget review and the council events items en bloc, that could easily be done. Moved, Councillor Schilling, those two items. Of course, members can ask questions about either and speak about either. Councillor Schilling, would you like to, having moved that way, would you like to ask your question now?
Thank you, Your Worship. My question is with regards to council events. I have asked this in an email of Mr. Clark with regards to our citizenship ceremonies that are still being conducted at Morfettville. Around council today, I've noticed pieces of paper that are saying 2 square metres. We're not really noticing the 1.5 anymore. So my question is, why do our citizenship ceremonies still have to be undertaken at Morfettville when a lot of state government events are not 1.5 metre spaced?
Who could advise on COVID regulations?
Can't advise on COVID regulations.
Well, I think that's partly the question, but Mr. Clark, who is familiar with this events item, will have a go. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Councillor Schilling. Through the chair, the reason why we've actually chosen to go to Morfordville to actually run these events is because under SA Health guidelines, we need to provide adequate space for people to actually take part in the ceremonies. The MCC currently has a maximum of 78 people that actually allows in the building at any one time. We have potentially around 100 people at each ceremony. But then on top of that, you also have their friends and family who want to attend as well. So it actually makes it extremely difficult to actually stage a ceremony. So that's the reason why we've chosen to go to the SAJC.
Councillor Schilling, anything further?
Yeah, just quickly, are there any other venues that we can look at? Because having them on Sundays at Morfordville are restricting myself, and I know a couple of other councillors, being able to attend, and we really want to attend.
Through the chair, I can really can appreciate it's a really important ceremony, so I can understand why you want to attend. Before we actually made this decision, we went to a number of schools and other events venues around Marion, and at the time, in the middle of COVID, they've all said they didn't want additional people on site. The only venue that was prepared to accept us was the SAJC. And they have horse racing on Saturdays, so the only day which is free for them is the Sundays. We could look at other options. We can go back and try and see if things have changed in the past few months, and we can get back to you and advise of any other options available.
And just added to that, I've had a lot of discussions about getting the optimal citizenship ceremony arrangements. One of the reasons we went to what we used to call Super Saturdays, now Super Sundays, is that it is more cost effective from a Labor and hire point of view to do three in a row where we have a sufficient number of new citizens. Well, I add that because some elected members might think, why don't you just do it on a Thursday evening at the MCC, for example, but we'd need to do probably one every 2 weeks to get through the numbers.
Through the chair, that's absolutely correct, yeah.
It's a fair comment. There is actually a shortage of large meeting spaces in the southwestern suburbs, full stop. But in light of Councillor Schilling's comments, it might be worth another scout around for school halls and that sort of thing to see if any other alternatives are out there. Thank you. So anything else, Councillor Schilling? You've moved. Are those two motions seconded? Question, Councillor Hull.
The Marion Cultural Centre, we discussed this recently, Mr. Mayor, about their 21st birthday celebration. Should that be in the report, or should it be, like there's others in there mentioned for the same year? But
when it came up as at the ward briefing, yeah. I understand there was a suggestion it be dealt with in the next calendar year. So there's plenty of time for a report to come up before then, and it gives time for staff to consider the Mayor's idea of a 70s party, which I think might be a really good celebration of the much-loved MCC. But
yes, I've already run that by the community, and seems the only one that might turn up appropriately dressed might be you, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I've still got all the old gear, thank you. Yeah. Let's keep going. Is the motion seconded, Councillor Telfer? Anything further to speak on that, Councillor Telfer? Happy? Anyone against? Any other questions? Then I'll put the motions. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Now we go to page 96, the LGA submission on their draft strategic plan. I thank staff for their concise presentation of the response. Might be one or two points of grammar I might want to debate, but otherwise it sums up the discussion that was had with elected members pretty well. I think over to you, elected members. Question from Councillor Gard.
could the matter of collaboration be added to the list? In other words, collaboration between local government and other stratas of government, which at the moment, yes, I think is could be.
Yes, indeed. It's not too late. That's what tonight's about, as long as we don't have to rewrite the whole thing.
Yep.
So that'll be added to the motion in brief terms, and then it will be later adapted into the letter. If, of course, the motion is passed with that inclusion, but it is something that has been discussed and supported strongly by our council. So that's a question. Gives us a revised motion there. Did you want to move that motion, Councillor?
Yes, very simply.
Councillor Gard, go ahead if you wish to speak to it.
I think it's really commendable that councils are being asked the question of input to the all-important strategic plan of essentially our peak body. Times are getting more and more pressing that we get our operations right and better and serviceable in every possible way. And I think it also avoids the omission of expertise that lies around our state in the form of every council and people that have to do with those councils. So we actually have a great structure compared with other levels of government when it comes to bright ideas and continuous improvement through those bright ideas. So the more we do to band together and input to such planning, the better.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Duncan, thank you. Anything to say? Thank you. Anyone against or questions? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, next we have a number of motions regarding, I suppose, the impact of the planning and design legislation and code being imposed upon us by state government. So I'll propose that the following motions be moved en bloc. It's up to you, but of course we can allow some liberties with the debate and the questions to cover the ground if necessary. So on page 143, Council Delegations under the PDI Act, Role and Responsibilities of Assessment Manager under the PDI Act, Replacement of Building and Swimming Pool Inspection Policy with new requirements under the PDI Act, Public Notification Fee and Signage on Land Requirements under the PDI Act, Revised Fees and Charges under the PDI Act. If you may wish to deal with all of those together, Councillor Schilling.
I'd like to move en bloc. I'm happy to say a few words.
Thank you.
Happy to move en bloc, mainly because we do have no choice in this. This is something under the law that we have to do. And if you do have questions, feel free to ask them. But our planning staff are a phone call, email away, and I've bombarded a few of them with emails in the last couple of days and had very quick, timely responses.
Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer? Yes, thank you. In fact, I do have a question for staff. I'm not sure who would like to come forward and answer that. I will say that for some time there's been a practice that where there's been a Category 3 proposal under the old Act, that the ward members and the mayor have been notified, so that there's at least some elected member visibility of proposals which might be more controversial. In fact, not much has really caused a stir, apart from a Category 2 notification I can think of. But my question for staff is, with all of this implementation of the PDI Act, is there anything council can do in terms of delegations, in terms of conditions or anything else that allows us as elected members an influence against the pernicious overdevelopment of the area between Seacombe Road and the tram line?
Thank you. To respond, Chair, I believe the best avenue we would have as council is to pursue any code amendments to policies that we don't see fit for the City of Marion.
But I mean, code amendments don't come into the motions before us tonight. I'm asking if there's anything in the delegations, any way we can tie the assessment manager's hands to stop him from approving division of a standard old house block into four box-like units.
I don't believe so, ma'am.
Right. Well, that's the end of that then. Any other questions? Yeah. When you're playing poker and you see four aces put down on the table by someone else, that's pretty well it. Then Councillor Hull.
Speak against it, Mr. Mayor. It's yes. Only on principle. I know it's futile.
Got two minutes.
But you know, you've touched on some of the sentiments as to behind why I'm against it. Because since I came into this place all those years ago, I've seen a rapid wrestle of power away from us in terms of planning, to the point where we're just now perceived as pesky distractions for people involved in the planning process. And however, that has to be tempered with community expectations. There's still a community out there, rightfully or wrongly, has great expectations as us as councillors. And that's going to go on. And in fact, the impact of this change will actually create even more angst between the community and the planning body. It worries me that if it goes to court, it's not the City of Marion that is actually taking people to court. It's some entity undescribed. And it's all going to get very blurry and complicated. But I'm going to vote against it on principle, just so I can actually tell people, well, I didn't support it. I don't want to have a record of any description that indicates that I supported this change. Because the government will be quick to seize on that, oh, the Marion Council supported it. Yeah, you know, it's basically, tonight we've got the opportunity to be giving tacit support to what's being proposed, when a lot of us would be quite troubled by the direction we're heading in. So that's it for what it's worth, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other speakers in favour? Question, Councillor Velasquez. Yes, Mr. Delacombs, what if none of these are adopted by Council?
Thank you, through the Chair. In somewhat of a pickle.
It could be, that's technical planning language. Can you bring it down to the common level?
Yes, thank you. So the main big criteria we have through
through my learned colleague in the team leader of planning, is that council wouldn't be undertaking and wouldn't meeting our obligations under the PDI Act for, most importantly, our inspections, which we undertake for compliance and building safety. That would be the most serious of our non-commitments if we weren't to pass this tonight.
What happens in terms of the 50 applications we get a week into the planning department?
And thank you, and further, we wouldn't be able to approve those, and they would likely be deemed consents that the would be forced on us.
Got you by the short and curlies, if that's not too graphic. Well, Councillor, I appreciate the sentiment, but I was approached by Mr Clark, our communications manager, today. Part of the budget to do with the whole PDI code that the planning department has is a communication with the general public about what's changed and what it means to them. So part of that communication could express the elected member view, which has been very consistent in a number of communications. So that might be the place for that more political response rather than in a formal motion. Mr. Del Coombs, you want to argue with that?
Thank you, Chair. Not to argue, but to supplement the Chamber with the information that there'll be a further update on the planning reforms at next week's Planning and Development Committee meeting, where we do have more of an update around the communications that the Mayor just spoke of.
All right. There have been speakers for and against. If there aren't any others, then Councillor Schilling, anything else? I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority, thank you. A division is called by Councillor Hull, so those in favour, please stand in your place. They are Councillors Masika, Valescu, Pryor, Telfer, Schilling, Duncan and Gard. Those against are Councillors Mason and Hull. The motion's carried by majority, thank you. And I must say, whatever we think of the political context and what it's going to mean for our residents in terms of unwanted excessive development in parts of the city, I do appreciate the immense amount of work that the planning team has put into getting us ready for this avalanche. So thank you for that. Page 256, the Community Safety Team Proactive Activities Half-Yearly Report. So they've proactively brought us a report. That's good. Now, anyone want to talk about roosters? Would anyone like to move the motion? Councillor Telfer? Yes.
The legend is education and information or enforcement. So for schools in January, we do education, and in February, we do enforcement. Cat de-sexing, we do education. Dog registration, barking dogs, we do education, but we don't do enforcement. I can't understand how one month we would be doing enforcement, another education, da-da-da-da. I just don't think it's an appropriate graph unless somebody can interpret it and explain it to me.
Mr. Della Coombs.
Thank you for the question. Councillor Telfer, if you see up the top of page 259, there is a small asterisk highlighting the fact that enforcement activities do are undertaken throughout the year. And I guess the idea of this was to highlight to members that in those months there'll be particular focus paid to those areas. So enforcement activities are undertaken throughout the year for all range of our powers. However, in those months specified in that chart, they are the months where the team will pay a particular focus to it.
Well, I must say it is sending a very strong message to the community. The message is we don't do enforcement very much. For example, barking dogs, that doesn't have an asterisk, and yet it's one of the problems we probably hear most about as elected members. What do you say about that, Mr. Delacombs?
Thank you. From my further review of the chart, I see that there is probably a misunderstanding of the asterisk and how it's been applied in that particular presentation.
Misunderstanding by staff or by elected members?
Perhaps by staff in terms of the way that this information is displayed, but I can assure members that enforcement activities are undertaken throughout the year on all of those.
So why are there... So are the months that are marked for enforcement for particular topics, that's meant to be a focus, is it? Not an exclusive sort of thing. All right. Does that help you, Councillor Telfer? Ed? Mr. Delacombs, we've got Ms. Perrin coming forward. We haven't even got onto roosters yet.
Through the chair, enforcement does occur about wood smoke under the Local Nuisance and Litter Control Act. So the intention of this proactive plan is to guide the team and to show members what the team is focusing on in addition to responding to investigating complaints and other information that's provided through the year. So where a complaint of nuisance smoke can be substantiated, there is provision for staff to issue an abatement notice. Often it's a matter of educating the person about how to correctly buy, store and burn wood.
I mean, I think I am getting it now that reactive policing is carried on all through the year if there's a complaint, but this is where there's a bit of proactive work in the not spare time, but in an allocated time for particular topics. Is that a fair summary?
Thank you, Mayor. And to further add to the chamber, if it would help, in our 12-monthly report, we'll improve this layout so it's more clear the information that we're presenting.
I think probably elected members are more concerned about actual statistics in the various categories, that is to say complaints versus enforcement, rather than, it's nice to know there are those proactive activities, but we probably only need to see that once. Other members might have comments, questions, Councillor Vlescu? Yeah. I think maybe this is a case because now is this the first of such reports that we've had? Yes. So I'd suggest a suspension of standing orders so that those who wish to offer feedback in terms of what we want in the report can do that now. Moved, Councillor Vlescu, seconded, Councillor Mason. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. So start off with Councillor Vlescu. What would you like to see in such a report?
Yeah, so dump rubbish, some of the hotspots. I know there are some hotspots around the city we'd just like to know what we're doing, whether that's private property, publicly owned housing or public land, council land. I'd also like to know what we're doing with the cameras as well, because I believe we have some cameras. I don't know what's happening with them, if that's your area.
So you mean the cameras that we authorised for potential hard rubbish dumping spots?
Yes.
So is that your area? Mr. Delacombs.
Thank you. I will just confirm that elected members have had access to the second attachment in that report, which is the statistics. So the from page 265, which is attachment 2, is the list of activities that does include the statistics on, for example, the wood smoke issues reported and undertaken, fire prevention activities, littering, hotspots, and so forth. Secondly, yes, that cameras do sit with us in between the operational support team, and I believe there's some information coming to the Asset and Sustainability Committee next month on that matter.
Well, have they been deployed the last few years?
Through the chair, they haven't been in use in recent times due to some perceived rollout issues when they were rolled out in terms of the installation of, and height that was required to install them. But with some new people and new awareness of the existence of these, there's a renewed effort to deploy these as soon as possible and make some use.
When did they stop being deployed? In which year?
I don't have that information with me, but that is being prepared by Ms. Harvey for the Asset and Sustainability Committee.
Was it before you started with us, Mr. Delacombs?
I believe so.
Right, so what, a couple of years at least. Right. So, yeah, enough said. Just in relation to your comment, Mr. Delacombs, about the attachment to having statistics, when I look at wood smoke on page 269, for example, all I see is education, social media post, how many views there were, but nothing whatsoever in the enforcement column. So does that mean there was literally no enforcement of wood smoke July to December 2019?
Through the chair, if I may. We can take that on notice for members and get information about that, the number of complaints and when they were received and when they were finalised. But this result doesn't show the number of reactive complaints, so the number of complaints were investigated upon receipt of a complaint, just the proactive activities.
Great. Well, it's really good that we have this opportunity to give you feedback so that the number of complaints and then the number of enforcement actions can be listed in such a graph next time. Now, there are others. Councillor Hull, suggestion? Page reference, Councillor? Thank you. Just allow staff to consider that for a moment. So, yes, you've got a heading hotspots. Ovals, there have been expiations. Christmas light displays parking, there was one expiation. Westfield Marion, zero expiations.
Thank you. Yes, I'll refer to Ms. Perrin's comment before about this showing the results of the proactive education for that month. So the actual regular parking statistics haven't been included in that column. So there would be expiations that have occurred there, but not as a direct result of the additional proactive activities that the staff were conducting at that time, which I've heard.
Yep, I think that's understood, and the next iteration won't be a proactive report. It'll just be an incident report, effectively. There aren't many. I think we've only got about, what, six or eight bylaws? And that's without the couple that were knocked off recently. Seven? I've got six, seven or eight, something like that. Ms. Perrin says six. Yep. Ms. Perrin, what's the animal management bylaw?
There are two bylaws regarding animals. One is dogs and one is cats. There's also one about permits and penalties, which doesn't lend itself to proactive monitoring. That just gives council the ability to issue a permit or issue an expiation for non-compliance of all of the bylaws. There's a bylaw regarding local government land, and that is to prohibit or require a permit to undertake certain activities on local government land. So there are six bylaws in total.
But Ms. Perrin, I thought I recall an extensive discussion at a forum, and I thought it was related to a bylaw about various other animals apart from dogs and cats that people shouldn't have. Is there no other restriction on what you can own?
No, not per se, but if there is nuisance caused from an animal, for example, barking, that's under Dog and Cat Management Act. If there's a nuisance from odour or noise, that would be under the Local Nuisance and Litter Control Act. So there certainly is legislation to deal with those issues.
If it was a giraffe,
possibly.
I think that comes under the planning section, yep.
Thank you. Just on that point, Mayor, as well, on the bylaws, we do have a forum, upcoming forum scheduled to discuss bylaws and the review of the bylaws. So I think there'll be a holistic opportunity for discussion on these in the near future.
Thank you. And yes. You just take that on board, or is there an answer to that?
Yeah, no, thank Dillon you. I'll take that on board for the next iteration of this report.
And the other one is obviously.
Thank you for the question. That's a separate business unit in the environmental health team, but we can look to provide some more information to council about the activities that team undertakes.
Why don't we have a 6-monthly report on environmental health as well? Like an incident report. Shouldn't be too hard to do.
Yeah, I'd be pleased to undertake that.
Yeah, well, the point's been made, so you've made a couple of good points there about improving the report. Thank you. Councillor Mason?
Yeah, I just want to ask about the education. So, for instance, it says a media campaign for parking. Was that done by council, or is that like a wider LGA kind of campaign, or...?
That was through the City of Marion Resources and with the cooperation of the Communications Unit.
Given that these kind of laws are pretty much Australia-wide or South Australia, would there be opportunities to maybe work with other councils or LGA to try and do a mass campaign? That might, if we all put money in together, that might get further reach.
If well, staff can take that on board and try and get some collaboration through the LGA.
Yes, we do, and
with
the
or
LGA,
without them.
sorry to cut you off, Mayor. Yes, the LGA does do a bunch of standard road safety messages, or back to school messages as well, in conjunction with the transport department about safety around schools, and we leverage off those, and the social media team would reshare posts that has some existing media content generated, so we're not having to generate it all ourselves, but we can certainly extend ourselves further and do some collaboration.
Councillor Telfer.
Can we do something better with page 259, the proactivities activities and educational plan, because it doesn't totally add up. Like for the bylaws, of which you said there were six, dogs and cats are only education and information, no enforcement. Like, can we redo this? Because
It would probably be better simply not to persist with presenting that graph, I suspect. It's probably not the keenest area of concern for community, but the number of complaints in different areas and the number of enforcement responses is of great interest. So, as a couple of other speakers have said, Councillor Vlescu?
It would be good to have the proactive laid over the actual statistics of reaction and enforcement, because that may indicate some trends. You know, having the proactive times during the periods of high incidence may actually show the impact that it's having on people's behaviour. So, you know, if there's some way to actually compare the data, that would be useful. But on its own, especially with the concerns that we have as an elected body, well, that I have as an elected member, I can't talk for others, about, you know, what's the impact? Are we actually solving the problems? It's probably not hitting the mark, but I can understand it.
All right. Any others? Any other feedback? Then what are we up to, Ms. McKenzie? Has it been moved? We were after a seconder. I resume standing orders. Seconded, Councillor Vlescu. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Look, it was a very good first go at such a report, and we look forward to the next one with feedback taken on board. Thank you. Now, we have a couple of corporate reports. So, the work health and safety report, the questions taken on notice register in the finance report might be moved en bloc. Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Pryor. Any questions, members? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those motions are carried unanimously. Thank you. We now go to the questions with notice and note those regarding the Parkholm phone tower incident, signage at the Lampshed Cafe. Actually, there's a bit of a spin-off point to that. I can just share with members briefly that there have been several pointers to the Mayor recently that there's so much more that Council could do with marketing. Now, it's come up in relation to Edwardstown Precinct. It's come up in relation to Council generally, our signage. It's come up in relation to neighbourhood centres, a whole range of things. Councillors may want to consider talking to the current or next chief executive about a marketing officer on a contract basis or something to bring some expertise to the area and get something going. Just putting it out there as a note. And that concludes the meeting. So, oh, well, haven't we done that? We don't have a motion, do we, or do we?
For motion.
Questions with notice.
Oh, you can call us if it's got anything.
Uh, we don't need a motion to adopt them. It is a report that simply goes into the agenda. Councillor Hull, do you have a point of order or something?
Well, just the question I asked about the Parkholme Shopping Centre phone tower. Why didn't we actually get those Safe Work or other reports? Because we've got a responsibility with building approvals, and if this was a catastrophic failure...
Let's just see if we can get that.
It fell in a public place.
Can Mr Scull or Mr Della Coombs could answer that? Ms McKenzie can answer it from a Safe Work perspective.
Through the Chair, in regards to the Safe Work question, it would not be our workplace, so it wouldn't be our incident that we would be required to report to Safe Work SA. That would be the property owner's responsibility.
In terms of...
Councillor, I think it's something that you might want to take offline and pursue. Well, we've really come to the end of the meeting.
This would have got building approval...
I'm not saying it's an irrelevant point, Councillor, but right now at the end of the council meeting is not the time to pursue it. It's not it's not a motion, it's not a debate.
Well, we used to have questions without notice that's sort of on the agenda
Mayor can always allow questions without notice, but I'm not allowing your comments without notice, no.
It's a question.
You're out of order. I'll declare the meeting closed.